So this is title of this talk, A New Approach to Subquadratic Space Complexity, Parallel Multipliers for Extended Bandwidth. The title looks, I guess, more like a hardware talk. It is, actually, but if you're interested in software, I have one slide to show you some implementation results based on hardware, so software implementation. This work was done jointly with Dr. Henning Fan when he was at the University of Waterloo. By the way, it's the last talk today. Thank you that you are still here. So I have actually all the time, okay? I have time for two talks. I can take that amount of time, or I can probably finish as soon as you want. I do not have any slides to motivate you. You are here, so that's actually a big motivation. So you must have some interest in subquadratic space complexity multipliers. So basically, I have no slides on motivation. I have no slides to give an outline of this talk. So I can probably skip my slides the way I want. Okay, I'll just state a few assumptions. As I said, no outline. No motivation. I'm just going deep into the talk. I just will give some simple assumptions. First one is that for efficient implementation of this scheme, I'm assuming that we have some good irreducible predefined polynomials. And they do exist. Many of you have seen a technical report from HB by Gadil Cerusi. He listed irreducible trinomials, polynomials, all the way up to scale complement 40. And the talk, as I mentioned to you, is about parallel multipliers. So assume that we have these two inputs, A and B, and they are arbitrary. Means, like, I do not know what is A in advance, and or what is B in advance, so I cannot really do any pre-processing. Okay, and I also assume that these two inputs are coming to the multiplier at the same time. They're coming simultaneously and coming in full size. Okay, that means all of a sudden I'll have n bits of A, n bits of B. Okay, and these two n signals will go through this box. This box has gates, and in our implementation, the gates are only AND gates and XOR gates, and they are all two input gates, and they correspond to finite field GF2 addition and subtractions. And so here we get the product after this propagation delay. Again, n bit product C. Very simple implementation here. The important thing is that we do not have any memory here. We do not reuse any logic gates that we have here. Okay? It's not like bit serial where you will be using some kind of memory to implement the algorithm in time in an iterative way. I'll compare this multiplier with other multipliers, actually only one multiplier, and I'll compare with respect to space and time. Space would really indicate, in our case, the number of logic gates, number of two input AND gates, two input XOR gates. Okay? But if you really try to implement this scheme in hardware, you'll have some other things to consider when you try to find an estimate of silicon area. For time complexity, we'll just consider the maximum delay due to gates only. No delay, we're not considering any delay through because of this interconnect that you would have in real implementation. And again, since we're using only two types of gates, I'll express this delay in terms of AND gate T sub A, XOR gate T sub S. By the way, if you are using, or if your, say, if your n is too very large, and if you're using some method like FFT, you do not need to pay too much attention to this talk. But if your n is too small that you're happy with the school book method, again, this talk is not really that relevant for you. But if you're in between, say, hundreds of, your n is several hundreds or more than that, say, thousands, and you are using especially Karasov algorithm, then this is probably a talk that would be very interesting to you. So these are really in terms of like hardware complexities. But if you're really interested in more generic complexities, that means how many arithmetic operations are doing, then I'll also give you number of GF2 multiplications and also number of GF2 additions. And since I showed in the previous slide that we will not be using any, we will not be reusing any gates, so these two will correspond to number of AND gates and number of XOR gates. Okay, so the arithmetic complexity is really the number of AND gates that I will have here, and this would be number of XOR gates that I will have here. Okay. So, there are basically two methods that you see. We're trying to implement finite field multipliers over GF2 to the power n, and one scheme is based on this polynomial operation. Very simple, it has two steps. In step one, multiply these two polynomials, which correspond to two inputs that I have for our multiplication. When you multiply, you get a polynomial. The degree could be up to 2n minus 2. And in step two, you try to reduce this S, okay, modulo field defining polynomial, say fx of degree n. And your result is cx. Now, if you just use simple school book method, the number of AND gates, two input AND gates, would be n squared. Number of XOR gates is close to n squared as well. Gate delays would be very close to this. There's also one AND gate delay, I'm just ignoring that one. So just look at these powers, and also this coefficient, log 2n. Now, if your fx here is a low weight polynomial, like trinomial or pentanomial, then the cost of step two is much lower than the cost of this one. For the time, you can just ignore that. So one simple, one well-known idea to improve step one in the previous slide is to use Karasov's trick. Suppose we have these two polynomials, but each of them is only two trunk polynomials. So the trick is like this. You write the multiplication of this ax and bx as follows. And if you look at this expression, what you see that it has only three multiplications, 1, 2, and 3. This is the same as this one. A straightforward multiplication would require 4. A straightforward multiplication of this polynomial will require 4 multiplications of half size. So by using this trick, it has gone down from 4 to 3. It's very well known. This technique was proposed by Karasov, I guess, in 1962 or 3. And if you apply this technique recursively on n term polynomials, ax and bx, the number of n gates would be n to the power log 2, 3, which is close to this one. Number of XOR gate would be like this. Okay, and gate delay would be 3 log xn. Now, if you compare these results with the results that I showed you in the previous slide when you're using school book method, there, this exponent was 2, okay, instead of 1.58. Here, it was something like n squared, and this was 1. So here, we have much longer delay, but the gate counts have gone down for larger, and I'm assuming, say, in this case, n is power of 2. So there's another method, and again, this method is also well known. And this method is probably used in hardware implementation. You would not see many software implementation based on this scheme. So this is based on matrix vector product. Again, I have this same two inputs, A and B, output is C, but these inputs are not really, it isn't, I'm assuming polynomial-based representation, but we are not doing polynomial multiplication. In step one, we form this matrix, Z, since I'm from Canada, so I will say Z. And Z is formed like this, A, AX, all the way up to AX to the power n minus 1, whatever it is. And then step two, you do this matrix vector multiplication. Okay? So if you have an FX with this many non-zero coefficients, then the number of XOR operations or XOR gates that you need for step one, okay, is slightly less than n times WMF. And a straightforward matrix vector product for step two will require about n squared, n gate and n squared XOR gates. So this is very similar to the straightforward polynomial multiplication based multiplication for finite field, GF2 to the power n. Okay. So the scheme that I'm going to present actually is an improvement based on this this matrix vector product. Okay, I'll just give an example. Suppose we have this very small field, GF2 to the power 4, and say the irreducible polynomial that I'm using to define the representation of the field elements is this. Then if I try to apply the previous scheme, matrix vector vector scheme, then I'll have C, vector C, and this matrix Z, and a vector B as follows. So these are simply the coefficients of my input B. These are the coefficients corresponding to the final result C. Here I have a matrix, 4x4 matrix, and this is function of input A and the irreducible polynomial F. Okay. Here it's very simple. Probably you can see, okay, this matrix has probably some kind of structure. But if I just change the previous polynomial from, say, this exponent change from, say, 1 to 3, then the Z matrix becomes like this. Well, again, this FX and the previous FX are very, very simple. If you take an arbitrary polynomial, arbitrary FX, then you would not see much regularity in this matrix. Okay? And just to form this matrix, okay, in the worst case, you can have lots of XOR operations. But if you choose your FX carefully, then the maximum delay that you will face to generate this matrix could be reduced to 1 TX. It's only one XOR. And this could be done by using, as I said, good FX and or using a basis called shifted polynomial basis. The paper that actually we have is really based on shifted polynomial basis, but just for the sake of simplicity, I'll explain everything with polynomial basis, which is probably familiar to many of you. So to improve, the scheme, that a matrix vector-based scheme, we use a technique called coordinate transformation technique. What we do, like the matrix equation that we had earlier, so C, Z, B, on both sides, we multiply matrix E, and we get this equation. Okay? And it has been proven that you can have U such that this U times Z will be matrix T, which is an n by n topology matrix. Okay. I actually did this work for 15 years ago, but that was for doing inversion and the English serial multiplication. I was trying to solve a problem. So I'm trying to find the inverse of an element B. So just trying to solve this equation. To solve an equation like this one is quite expensive, but if you can have some topism matrix, then that could be solved in a very efficient way. If you just use Euclidean algorithm, external Euclidean algorithm, and the complexity is B go n squared, it's a regular implementation. But for solving a topism, this kind of matrix equation, the complexity is much, much lower. So the good things about this one is that this topism matrix, which is an n by n matrix, is completely defined by its 2n minus 1 entries. Okay? And this transformation matrix U is completely defined, or can be defined, using the field defining polynomial that we are using. And as I mentioned, this idea was used earlier, especially to transfer things from polynomial basis to triangular basis. And although I'm talking here only the fields of characteristic 2, but this transformation technique can be is applicable to GF Q to the power n, but Q is prime or power of prime. I'm just continuing from example 1. So in example 1, this was our matrix Z. And here I have a special matrix U. Multiply, we get this matrix. This is the topism matrix. What you see here, elements along this back diagonal, okay, are the same. So this entire matrix is determined by, say, these 7 elements. If you look at the second example, you can take this matrix U, which is different from the previous U, then multiply Z, you will get, again, another topism matrix. So, well, what can we do with topism matrix? Here I have this matrix just I showed you in the second previous slide, 4x4 topism matrix. Let's split it two ways, in the half, okay? Then you get 4 matrices, smaller matrices, T0, T1, T2, and this happens to be T1 as well. So this matrix and this matrix, same, okay? So you keep splitting this way, you'll end up with topism matrices only. Not only that, if you try to add 2 topism matrices, you'll get another topism matrix. That helps us to use some kind of recursion. So suppose we're trying to multiply a topism matrix with a vector V. We have split this n by n matrix into this small 4 matrices, each with size n over 2 by n over 2. Then if we just try to multiply this matrix with this vector, normally we'll require 4 multiplications, matrix vector multiplication. But Winograd showed that this could be done using only 3 multiplications. So the number of matrix vector products has been reduced from 4 to 3. But we could also say here we have some summations, matrix summations. And using some simple tricks, the cost of adding these 2 matrices and here could be reduced by 25%. The details are in the paper. But if we apply that technique that I showed in the previous slide recursively, the number of AND gate that we will need to multiply a topism matrix by a vector is this. N to the power 1.58, number of XOR gate is this. Compare this one with the previous one that we saw with Karasuba-based technique. There the factor was 6. Okay? And the gate delay for this one is this. In the Karasuba case, it was 3. the number of amperes remains the same. Now, what I showed you is when we're trying to split the matrix into two ways, but this could be extended, like if you try to break this matrix into, say, three ways. So here we have nine matrices, but again, after this three-way split, these are all topless matrices. And a straightforward multiplication of this matrix with this vector will require nine multiplications, but applying Unover techniques, we need only six. Again, if we apply this trick in a recursive way, then the number of n gate would be n to the power 1.63, the number of XOR gate, and this is the gate delay. So the best thing is to use probably the two-way split rather than three-way split. But in reality, we would not have probably n, which is power of 2 all the time, or power of 3. There are ways to deal with this. I guess a Christoph group actually worked on something like this. Here, I'll just briefly discuss how this can be dealt with. Suppose I have formulas for this efficient matrix vector multiplication for, say, prime p sub I and prime p sub j. In our case, or the presentation that I have given you so far, p sub I probably 2, p sub j is 3. Okay? So if my arbitrary n is divisible by, say, p sub j and p sub I, then it can be shown that the number of x or number of n gates that I will need, okay, would be more or less same. It doesn't matter which one I apply first, but the number of XOR gates could vary. So here I have a formula. It's a generalization of what I presented earlier to indicate the number of XOR gates when I'm applying the formula for P sub I. Now, this is an expression to indicate how many XOR gates I will need when I have this n, and I apply first P sub I and then P sub j. So this is the total number of XOR gates. And then you can have a similar expression, but just reverse these two, swap these two. That means you first apply P sub j and P sub I, and then compare number of XOR gates, and then determine which one you'd like to apply first. Okay. Here I have an example. Suppose our n is 6 times t, t is an integer. Now the number of XOR gates, okay, if I apply 2 first, and the formula for 2, and then formula for 3, this would be the number of XOR gates. If I just do the reverse, this is the number of XOR gates. So from here, we could see which one to apply first. But if our n is prime, this technique would not apply. Then we can do some kind of padding or deleting of rows in the matrix vector equation to get something which is power like factor of 2 or factor of 3. What is this? That's good. Okay. So now I'll restate the algorithm that I showed you earlier for multiplying elements over finite field using matrix vector idea. So previously I showed only two steps, now we have four steps. Again, the first step is same, we form matrix Z. Here I have an extra step, 1 prime. This is to transform this matrix Z to a topless matrix by doing this multiplication. And then I have the second step is really matrix vector multiplication, and I have shown you technique how to multiply this one very efficiently. And then finally, we can obtain C from this by doing some kind of reverse transformation. But as you can see, this multiplication may not be easy, or this reverse multiplication. We have developed some efficient transformation matrix. For example, if you have a trinomial or an FX, then this is the structure of your matrix U. Here, you have an identity matrix of this size, another identity matrix of this size. So going back to example one, if I apply this matrix U to transfer this Z, then we'll have this T matrix. This T matrix is obtained from here, not by doing any arithmetic operation. This is done simply by moving this row from here to here. So this transformation is without any arithmetic operation. Similarly, like you can apply another some kind of row operation to get matrix from Toplitz matrix, for example, 2. So what I'm trying to say here, if you have trinomial, then this transformation would not cost you any arithmetic operation. But trinomials do not exist for all n. Sometimes you will have pentanomials. For example, these are the values of n that you see in the recommendations from NIST for ECDSA applications. Okay, not all of them have trinomials. Some of them have the lowest weight polynomial would be pentanomial. In those cases, you can find pentanomials like this structure. And for this kind of fx, the transformation matrix would look like this. Okay? This is not as nice as the previous one, but still it's very nice in the sense that this J matrix has all entries equal to 0 except one entry, which is shown here. And we have, in the paper, you'll find a similar transformation matrix for other polynomials, pentanomials, like equally spaced pentanomials. So assuming that we have an efficient transformation, now I'd like to show you, without going into the details, like a number of XOR gates that you'll need for the method that I showed you, and I will just compare with something that you will find if you try to apply Karasuba technique. So here, the number of XOR gates for Karasuba-based technique, gate delay, and this is what I showed you. So by the way, the number of AND gates are the same, just the difference is in the XOR gates. So the coefficient has gone down from 6 to 5.5, and this is for TOA split. If you apply Karasuba algorithm, on three-term polynomials in recursive way, and this is what you get, and this is for our TOA split of Toplitz matrix. The gate delays are, as you can see, from 3 to 2, 4 to 3, so. As I said, okay, I have a software implementation done recently, and here I just show you the table. So for Karasuba-based algorithm, the number of XOR instructions that you need is 5x, where s is the size of the operands that you use in your recursion. And this is for, say, the MMB matrix vector product-based scheme. Okay, this is the number of read operations, number of write operations. In terms of actual speed up, we have seen the speed up about 20 to 30%. Now, how about other bases? So far, I have been dealing with polynomial bases, but can we apply this technique to other bases? People have used dual bases or triangular bases in coding for the implementation of, say, encoder, decoder for Reed-Solomon codes or similar codes, where, say, for multiplication, A is represented with respect to, say, polynomial bases, and B is represented with respect to dual bases. In that case, you can write an equation like this. Here, this equation will be a Toplitz matrix. This is a vector B, which corresponds to, I think I have said the other way. B is with respect to polynomial bases, A is with respect to, say, dual or triangular bases. Then here we have this Toplitz matrix and vector product. And the final result is with respect to this dual or triangular basis. So here we do not need the transformation that I showed you with the polynomial basis. So matrix Z, matrix T tilde is obtained directly. And at the end, we would not need any transformation back to, say, change this one from something to poly, basis S. Okay? How about normal basis? Well, if you use normal basis, then you know that optimal normal basis would be your best choice. Okay, that would give you the least complexity in terms of the number of gears or number of arithmetic operations. And if you use an optimal normal basis, whether type 1 or type 2, you need this many arithmetic operations over GF2. Okay? If you apply the technique, then what we have in a separate technical report is that you can write the product in terms of normal basis, the final result in terms of normal basis, as sum of these two matrices multiplied by a vector, which is the other input represented in normal basis. This is a Toeplitz matrix. This is not a Toeplitz matrix, but this matrix is simpler than this one. Here, all the rows, okay, are the same. So the complexity of multiplication of this matrix and vector V is much less expensive than the multiplication of T, B. But this is for type 1, and type 1 is probably not very attractive if you're trying to use normal basis for cryptographic application. But here I have something for type 2 optimal normal basis. And type 2 optimal normal basis do exist for many values of n. And what we have shown is that for this case, the product represented in normal basis can be expressed as this. Sum of two matrices, one is Toeplitz, another is Hankel matrix, and this is a vector. And the formula for multiplying a Hankel matrix and a vector is just the opposite of what you will have, or very similar to what you would have for multiplying T and T prime and B prime. And here I have the final results. So for type 1 optimal normal basis, you need this many AND gates. This N comes from multiplication of this special matrix and this vector, number of XOR gates. This is for type 2. And before this work, I was not aware of any normal basis multiplier which would require less than this complexity arithmetic operations. So in summary, what I have presented here is a matrix vector product based approach to subquadratic multiplication over GF2 to the power n. And asymptotically, this approach would give you about 8% improvement in terms of gate count and about 33% improvement in terms of gate delay. This 8% comes from factor 6 and 5.5. This one comes from 2 and 3 with log 2n. And for software implementation, we obtained between 20 to 30% improvement for n in this range. And what I showed you that this new approach can also be used with other bases. And previously, there was no work for subquadratic multiplication using this basis. This transformation technique I showed you can also be applied for non-binary fields. Like if you're using pairing based scheme and if you have GF2 to the power k that you have seen in the previous talk, this technique can also be applied there. And I just mostly showed you the results. The more details are in this technical report. Thank you. Question?
From a security point of view, is there an advantage to knowledge of using general polynomials versus trinomials from a security point of view?
Well, see, I will answer this one a little bit longer way, okay? Answer this to this question. I have tried to probably just say that the cryptography is the only application, okay? Like it could be used for many things. And if you look at the standards, okay, like the recommendations from NIST, you'll see that they have pentanomials or trinomials, okay? So as far as I know, okay, use of these polynomials are not considered to be really a security threat.
And so in your method, how much advantage are you getting by applying this method for the case of trinomials and then another versus general problem?
I guess of what I have here, this is really for the case of trinomials. So you will see 8% improvement. This is in terms of gate counts. Again, as I mentioned to you, I do not have any data for VLSI implementation. So there will be other things which would contribute.
Right, so if it was not trinomial, but it was a general polynomial, then would you still see this kind of improvement? Or?
Yeah, this technique, this transformation technique, applies to any polynomial.
Right, but does this improve?
This data is only for trinomial case.
Right.
And for pentanomial case, you can get something a little less than that. Okay, or I forgot the exact data is in the paper. Thing is that if you use like an arbitrary fx, it is a polynomial, then you will also have some penalty, okay, when you use polynomial based scheme. Here, for arbitrary fx, the main penalty is to transform this z to t. Okay?
So the Karasuba scheme assumes also the use of special polynomials?
No, Karasuba algorithm is just to multiply two polynomials. And then we have a second step, which is reduction, and that step depends on fx.
Okay.
But I think, this scheme, like if you just try to use arbitrary fx, this scheme would probably suffer more than the Karasuba-based scheme. Because if your fx is known in advance, then the modular reduction could be done in a very efficient way. Here, I haven't really looked at how an arbitrary polynomial, arbitrary fx can help you to transfer f to t. In my impression is that the Karasuba-based scheme would be better, okay, if you have an arbitrary fx. But again, one thing to point out that up, unless you have some security threat with trinomial or pentanomials, you'd always find, okay, a trinomial or pentanomials or something like that. More importantly, what I have showed you is for characteristic 2. This scheme applies to characteristic, say, 3 or some other thing. And there you can choose actually binomials, irreducible binomials. And things would be much better there.
Thank you.
One comment and one question. When you were saying that normal basis with some kind of topics, I remember one result that you might look into a couple of years ago, 2-3 years ago, and published it in Chess. I think it was Manuel Leone. He essentially adopted the conversion techniques from going from normal basis to more like canonical basis type system, and you do Karasuba there and you come back. And he improved it a little bit by merging the reduction step into the conversion. So in terms of reference, I think that would be nice. And of course, that's not as general as what you're presenting. In that case, that's nice.
One comment I would like to make, optimal normal base, type 1 optimal normal basis could easily be extended to polynomial based representation with some redundancy.
You don't even have to have redundancy, you can still keep the and also for the type 2, then you have more redundancy. One more comment, I published a paper a couple of years ago about using Wiener-Graf convolution, short convolution techniques for improving the efficiency in getting into the subquadratic area or the area complexity. Can you compare it at all to that work?
The comparison I have given is only with respect to the Karasuba-based scheme. If you go to the technical report, you'll see
more comparison. I'm just curious to see, because it's a completely different approach.
We have, especially in the tables that we have there, okay, you will find comparison based on the work by J. Jean-Claude Bajard, okay, they use
Bajard,
this,
yeah.
Okay, they also have a subquadratic complexity
mm-hmm.
multiplication, okay. They do actually better when, the splitting is done three-way,
right.
In terms of area, not time. The time is really not like this.
What is really curious about this is because here you're using a convolution technique, right? The efficient convolution technique from GSP. And the Wiener Graph convolution technique is yet another convolution. Again, it seems like you're digging more into the GSP.
Probably, yes, yeah.
And it's essentially new research. It's quite interesting to see how it's
going. No, I agree with that, yeah. Yeah, so if you look at here, what we have done now is like really, I have taken things from other places.
Right.
Okay, people should have done these things say, long back when people are thinking about finite field multiplication. There's a question.
When you were dealing with the general polynomial base, you had this matrix U, and you said that U times Z, that is just can be computed without any arithmetic operation.
That was, I guess, only for a very special case I showed you.
Yeah, that's fine. But after you get it out its matrix and multiply it by B, you still have the recovery step of how are you going to get the C? You have only
okay, good. So when you have when I have multiplied this one, okay. So here I have T, this is giving us T. So here I use the technique I showed you.
Yeah.
But this is no longer C.
Yeah.
So this is C prime. So at the end I have to get C prime by doing something like this.
Yeah, but then
this matrix, okay, for the special matrix I showed you is this multiplication is again free of arithmetic operations.
Okay, so the multiplication by U inverse can also be done without any
That's right. This if you take U the way I showed you, then this U is also doesn't have any more than one okay per row. So you don't have any arithmetic operations. But this is for the case of trinomials. For pentanomials, you will see actually one additional operation at least. There's more weight that you have in your irreducible polynomial, the more complex this matrix will become.
So for the chip designer, it is assumed that the matrix U is found outside of the chip, right?
That's right. If you assume that you have fixed trinomial or fixed pentanomial, so this matrix is really defined based on the field-defining polynomial that you are using. Okay. In most cases, this multiplication would be simply in the case of trinomial, this would be simply permutation without any computation.
Okay, one final question. Is there any algorithm which has complexity less than n to the power log 3 to the base 2? Or is there, or if not, what is the best known lower bound?
Talking about this?
Yeah.
Oh, you can use FFT, Sumer has worked on the FFT schemes, okay? So as I said earlier, that if you're really, you have very large N, probably 40,000 or so, or how is the bound, or is the limit? The crossover point, if you have very large N, then you can use those kind of techniques, where the number of n gates would be linear to n. Or, did I say right? But number of n XOR gates would be more. But, this is this scheme is good when your operand size are in between that very large and very small. You don't want to use school book method, you don't want to use the FFT-based scheme, then you use if you're using Karasuba-based scheme, then this is an alternative to Karasuba-based scheme.
Okay. I think it would be good to have a table of cryptographic sizes of the fields and different algorithms in terms of their parallel complexity?
Sure, definitely. One thing is that, well, see, when you have n is equal to 2 to the power of something, okay, you do not have trinomials. Okay, the result that I gave you, those are actually for rings, okay, not for fields. But say, if you consider this field GF to the power 163, say, this one is not divisible by 2 or 3, this is a prime number. So what you do when you write this matrix Z, and here you have matrix B, 163 minus 1, you just delete this, you just try to calculate this very last element, okay, by just brute force method. And then you have 162, okay, to deal with. And this one can be written as 2 to the power 3 times what, 4? Then you can apply the technique. Yeah, similarly, say others say, I don't have the slide, but say, if you have, say, this one, 233, again, you can use this kind of technique to, and actually, we do not have the actual number of gates, but it would be interesting to have something. And also probably have some actual implementation rather than just simple gate counts.